This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. The MBTA is driving toward the future. General Manager Phil Eng has promised to rid the subway system of all slow zones by the end of the year while simultaneously endorsing big plans for the future of transit in the region. But sometimes, seems like the T itself has other ideas.
Well, the accidents and everything else, it just gets worse, not better.
Now, that's a Green Line rider talking to NBC 10 after a derailment near Kenmore Station this weekend on the day that part of the line reopened from repairs. So the question is, can Eng put us where we need to go with one step backward for every two steps forward? Here to talk about it, Taylor Dolvin, transportation reporter for the Boston Globe, and Brian Kane, executive director of the MBTA Advisory Board. Taylor, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Great to have you, Brian. Welcome back.
Thanks so much.
So much to talk about. And I will note for listeners, Phil Eng, general manager of the MBTA, will join us here on Radio Boston in the studio on April 4th. Don't worry, we'll remind you again, but we are looking forward to that conversation. So, okay. So first, Brian, is two steps forward, one step back on the operations, the cleanup stuff, a reasonable statement?
Well, yes and no. It's certainly better than no steps forward and two steps back, which we've had in the very recent past. There's always going to be hiccups with large and so many moving parts that the T has, but we are making progress. And I do think that what we've seen with the shutdowns and the diversions is generally positive. I mean, yes, there was a hiccup with the switch issue in Kenmore. But on balance, things are a heck of a lot better than they were. I think they removed 20-odd slow zones. I'm sure Taylor knows. But no, we are making progress, and it is moving forward.
Okay, so let's get to where we are, Taylor. And we've just come out of a couple of different shutdowns. We've got, a shutdown on the red line. We've got a shutdown on the green line. So talk to me a little bit more about where we've been on shutdowns recently, et cetera.
Yeah, so I think it's important to remember where we came from. We came from a world in which riders endured long shutdowns of a subway line and saw little to no results. And so now what we're seeing starting on this...
That would be the Orange Line during the previous administration.
Yes.
In what was like time has lost all meaning.
Summer 2022.
2022.
Yeah. So now fast forward to this administration, and the T launched its track improvement program in November. And what we saw immediately in December and January was a lot of progress on chipping away at these slow zones. The T was finally adding fewer slow zones than they were eliminating, and we were seeing real progress.
In your reporting, I think you said December and January, we went from 179 to 127.
Yeah, and what we saw in February was that actually ticked back up again to, I think, in the 130 range. And in February, the T added more restrictions than it eliminated. And so I think that that result is really frustrating for riders who are enduring these shutdowns. Obviously, you'd like to see progress continue to go down, but Phil Eng, the general manager of the T, says that he is still committed to eliminating all slow zones on the system by the end of the year. And I think the February increase the T attributes to its geometry car that went out and scanned all of the 3/4 of the subway and was finding defects that the human eye can't detect, and that led to an uptick. But I think Brian's right. I mean, we have come from a time when no progress was being made after these shutdowns, and we're seeing real progress now.
So I want to pull apart a bunch of what Taylor just said, because it's actually helpful to understand it, because otherwise I think the average person would be like, I'm sorry, now wait a minute, what do you mean they went back up, we're repairing them, but now there are more? So I'm going to pull these things apart. First, Brian Kane, when Phil Eng announced this slightly more than a year-long process, he was very clear that there would be new slow zones that would emerge even as the T was working on repairing the old slow zones. And that is because?
Well, it's a very complex system, and every time something gets fixed, sometimes they find new things that were not as evident before. An example, you pull up track that's 30, 40, 50 years old, and you replace it, and then you discover that the ballast, for instance, which are the rocks basically in between, also need replacement because there's been a little bit of a dip that's developed. So this is actually a good thing that we are finding these additional defects as we go along, because they've been there all along. There was just no one knew about them. And let's also not forget, Tiziana, that the geometry car itself, which Taylor referenced, for a long time was not even certified to be doing the inspections that it is now doing and finding the defects that it is finding. And so while we are making not perhaps as fast of progress as many of us would like to see, we are at least moving forward at a pace. A lot of us would wish it was a little bit of a faster pace, but we are moving forward.
Okay. And so this was expected, this sort of, you know, we're getting rid of some, but more come online. Now, I want to stay with this geometry car thing for a second, Taylor. And the first time I really understood what it was the first time that General Manager Ang was here on the show. As Brian says, there was a point when it wasn't even certified. And basically, there was a time when even when the geometry car found problems, there was a huge time delay in the inner operations of the MBTA before that led to, and if it led to, anybody identifying, okay, there's a problem that needs to be fixed. So we're also seeing, with the emergence of new slow zones, something that's actually working that didn't used to work. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's a great way to describe it. Before this machine would go out and scan the tracks, it would flag tons of defects, and the T wasn't accounting or recording those defects, and it was actually leaving trains going full speed over areas that had serious defects and should have required trains to slow down. So I do think, you know, that is also progress. We'll just have to see, I think, in the coming months whether they can turn this around and keep the number of total slow zones going in the right direction, going down.
Okay, so Brian Kane, I can say, yes, listeners, you are not imagining it, that the Red Line Alewife to Harvard plus evenings was closed for 10 days. Yes, you saw the BC and D line just closed for another 18 days. Yes, the Orange Line is now closed down. Yes, there are still slow zones. And yes, right now the MBTA is on track to do what it said it was going to do, which is eliminate all the slow zones by the end of the calendar year.
That is correct. But let's not forget, just because slow zones themselves are eliminated, that doesn't mean all of the problems go away.
Well, there we go. This is the next part.
Well, so the what they've done for the last, what they're doing in 2024 is geared towards fixing track. Track is a critical component of running trains. There's also a ton of other moving parts that need to be upgraded. Signals, switches, the track.
Literally moving parts. Literally.
Trains themselves.
The trains themselves. Yeah. The tunnel infrastructure. Let's not forget the Green Line tunnel infrastructure is 120 years old. It doesn't last forever, and it itself will have to be replaced segment by segment, component by component at some point. So the shutdowns that we are seeing, folks better get used to them, because we're going to have a lot more of them going forward in the next decade. And that's because you cannot defer maintenance for 100 years in some cases and have it fixed overnight.
I don't like it when you say those things, Brian Kane.
I'm sorry. I am nothing but the truthsayer here, Tiziana. Behind every dark cloud is a silver lining. But eventually, our children should see a better MBTA.
So we're here with Brian Kane, doomsayer of the day, executive director of the MBTA Advisory Board, and Taylor Dolvin, transportation reporter with the Boston Globe. And what we are looking at in this part of the conversation is the moment that we're in with the day-to-day repairs of this infrastructure. Now, heads up, a little bit later in the conversation, we're actually going to have a pretty robust talk about some plans in place, both at Blue Hill Avenue and an extension to Everett, about new stuff, because the hope is that we can both sort of chew gum and walk at the same time. But I want to stay here a little bit longer. Brian has painted a sad picture of continued closings, you know, 120-year-old infrastructure. I think about, as I age, just how hard it is to maintain my bones, right? And you think about 120 years old, I get the point. And then there's the catenaries and the electric substation, Taylor Dolvin, that shut down basically the main artery right in the middle of the city. So these other disasters, if that's, I'm trying not to be melodramatic, but also use words that are what it feels like to riders, are also going to keep cropping up.
Yeah, I think that's what makes this incredibly frustrating. And I think a lot of trust has already been broken when it comes to riders having any faith that these kinds of repairs are going to last. I think that it's just really hard for people to believe, especially when the derailment on the Green Line this weekend happens right after the 18 days of Green Line closure. The T says that it had to do with the trolley and not the tracks. But I think you can't blame people for immediately jumping to the conclusion of this is another failure. And I think people like Brian said are just going to have to get used to these hiccups along the way and somehow find a way to have faith that this is going to play out. But there is a long road ahead in terms of outside of the track, what needs to be done.
Okay, so I get that. But also, Brian Kane, I'm thinking about the report that just came out from the Greater Boston Chamber of Commerce. And I wasn't planning on quoting it here, so I'm going to be loose with it. People under 30, roughly 25%, saying that they are thinking of leaving Greater Boston, and a significant percentage, not 50%, but maybe around 40%, saying that transportation, you know, reliable transportation and transit, a factor. So if what Taylor and you are saying is true, does that mean that the slow zones, getting those fixed, isn't going to help at all for those that 40% consideration?
No, it'll help dramatically. And we're already seeing time savings on those lines that have seen those slow zones lifted. And I think people often wonder, why doesn't the T just fix everything simultaneously? Why can't that just happen? And were that we could, but you cannot operate all of the different trades in very confined tunnels simultaneously and maintain a safe working environment. The important thing here, and Taylor's reporting has been critical to this, the T sort of lacked a culture of safety, and the FTA has agreed with this. So they are putting in a culture of safety, which means they can do a little bit less than they probably used to do, but they're trying to make those shutdowns stretch longer and get more done to the extent that they can in a safe and reliable way. In terms of folks leaving the region, housing costs are not helping.
No, actually, that was the number one driver.
Well, yeah, and the T is a solution to that. If we could build more density, the Secretary of Transportation and the Governor have made that very clear. That is what the MBTA Communities Act, which is supposed to add some density, is all about. But this doesn't happen overnight, and it's going to take a while. And I am very fearful of Massachusetts not having the next generation come up to maintain our way of life and keep our economy strong.
I would guess that a key frustration among people who are considering leaving or don't see themselves here long term when it comes to transportation is service. People used to, I mean, the Focus 40 plan for where the T was supposed to be by 2040 was pushing the T to have 3-minute wait times between trains. We now, I mean, you're lucky if you have a 10-minute wait time between trains. That, in a lot of places, is not considered rapid transit. So I think, you know, the service levels remaining so far below pre-pandemic levels are certainly not helping. And now in 2024, you know, years after the pandemic first started, we're just not seeing that rebound on the service side. And I think that has to be hurting the T.
There's one more thing that made my ear perk up, and I want to address it. You talked about the culture of safety. And in my 5 years hosting Radio Boston, there have been so many times that we have seen reports and condemnations of the MBTA for not having a culture of safety. This was a big thing. So I guess, Brian Kane, are we truly seeing a cultural turnaround in this organization toward a culture of safety?
It is like turning a battleship, but it is happening. It is happening slowly. But yes, I can tell you there is a huge difference there today than when I was there 6-7 years ago.
You're listening to Radio Boston, and we're talking about the latest at the MBTA with Taylor Dolvin of the Boston Globe and Brian Kane of the MBTA Advisory Board. Question's been with two steps forward and one step back. If that's a fair characterization, then can we get where we need to go? So shifting gears now, pun kind of intended, from operating repairs to long-term ambitions. And we're going to start with the $44 million vision that the city of Boston has for the Blue Hill Avenue corridor through Mattapan, Roxbury, Dorchester. Better MBTA bus service for the corridor's 37,000 daily riders is at the heart of that. Taylor, Brian, I'm going to have you stand by because Russell Holmes is on the line. Holmes represents parts of Hyde Park, Roslindale, Dorchester, Mattapan in the state legislature. He was first elected to the job in 2010 on a platform of improving transit options for people in what he called Boston's Black Belt. Representative Holmes, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me again.
So you've said that the sort of the failure in 2009 to get the 28X Silver Line, which would have been, close to rapid bus transit down the center of Blue Hill Ave, was part of what motivated you to run. 15 years later, here we are. The moves here by the city aren't really rapid bus transit, but there's a move here. How do you feel about it?
Well, I certainly feel this a progress. I still, as I said 15 years ago, am stunned that we turned down $140 million to really bring bus rapid transit to the black community. And this $44 million is the first step. But from my perspective, it's the first step to level and bring more service to the actual bus riders. I think today the way Blue Ave is set up, it is set up and it is designed for folks traveling through my community, not the people who live in it. And so a bus rapid type system down Blue Hill in the middle lane now makes it so those folks can stand out and be safe, can have amenities, can know exactly when the bus is coming, and can get them from Mattapan Square up to Rove Hall much faster.
So you talked about it as a first step. Yesterday we had a conversation with Jim Aloisi, who was the Secretary of Transportation at the time that the Silver Line project failed, and Sonia Chang Diaz, who was a state senator at that time. And we talked about this tension between, you know, moving to get things done and taking time for the community. And I want to hear a little bit from Jim on that tension.
These are massive challenges. These are real issues. There's a real tension between getting things done and time. You know, all of us who have been in a position of political power, which enable us to get these things done, are by definition only in office for short periods of time.
But you've been in office for 15 years, and there's been a push on of some kind for 15 years. Yep. How does this, as a first step 15 years later, feel? Like too slow? Listen, this is how long it takes, especially knowing there's another two-year community process to come.
So when in 2009, I had not been elected. And yes, I ran really I literally had on my campaign office the entire 28X and every stop, and anyone who walked in my office knew that I'm planning to bring transit down Blue Avenue. And so from my perspective, 15 years later, only bringing just a small portion is definitely not enough. I still am amazed that a project that would have delivered $140 million and probably by the scope changes would have brought in $200 million that would really revolutionize what happened down Blue Avenue. But this is the best I can get now. And there's no way I'm going to turn or give horse in the mouth, and I'm going to say, let's go and get this started. But is it enough for me? No. And can I just say about the secretary, the challenge there was you had a black president call the black governor and say, let's put $140 million down the middle of the black neighborhood. And who would have ever imagined the black neighborhood would revolt and say no? And the secretary walked into Mattapan Library and said, hey, we have a great idea. We know it really is not shovel-ready, but it's near shovel-ready. And if after we go through this process, we will, if you don't like it, then we'll send a letter to and say we're going to turn it down. That's exactly what we ended up doing. The politicians at the time said, oh, we don't like it. We don't think we have enough community engagement, and we haven't heard enough from the community. And we literally turned down that large sum of money. And so as a consequence, it did motivate me, and I still regret the secretary at the time, that Secretary Aloisi at the time stood in my neighborhood and decided to say, if the community votes no, then we'll go no. I think that was a bad decision, that we told the president and that we told the governor no, and we're still sitting on that decision now 15 years later.
All right, so that was all federal money. This time around, the $44 million that's being proposed, $15 million federal, $11 million MBTA, $18 million city. So before I let you go, with that ringing in my ears, Representative Holmes, what is your advice to Boston Mayor Michelle Wu?
My advice is to deliver this exactly the way we said. I've heard some of your conversations today about building trust. And so we need to come in, build trust, do exactly what we said, and it is design it block by block, exceed the expectations, because many of the same folks who I hear now against it were the same folks who were against it 15 years ago. And I've seen them against many improvements, transit improvements throughout the neighborhood. Let us deliver an excellent project down Blue Avenue so then we can then leverage it to bring more transit to a neighborhood that is transit dependent.
Russell Holmes is a state representative in the middle of something else, but stepped aside to join us from the State House, which I truly appreciate. Thanks for being with us today. I hope we'll get to talk to you again.
Thanks so much for having me.
So we'll still hear in Studio 2 Taylor Dolven of the Boston Globe and Brian Kane, Executive Director of the MBTA Advisory Board. Really interesting conversation there, and I'm just going to start with reactions from the two of you. Taylor Dolven, you first.
Yeah, I've spent a lot of the last 2 weeks in Mattapan talking to bus riders and business owners, and I think the representative seems to have a really good handle on how people are feeling about this. I found a lot of people are skeptical and nervous, and I think that definitely traces back to the failure of 28X in 2009. But a lot of people are actually hopeful, you know, and cautiously optimistic about what this could mean for the community. And so I think we'll have to see. It's going to be a long 2 years before construction starts.
So Brian Kane, I'm going to play a little more sound actually before I turn to you for your reactions. Yesterday, as I said, we had Jim Aloisi, who's was the Secretary of Transportation, and Sonia Chang Diaz, who was a brand new state senator at the time. She was one of the people who signed the letter saying stop, which Jim Aloisi then did. It was around community trust. And here's a little bit of what she had to say yesterday.
That's a parent-teacher conference meeting, right? That's a trip to the doctor's office. There's so many ripple effects of, you know, the time that we wait. It's a defining tension of work in government and the public sector. And I would say, you know, my best sort of prescription for that, you know, for resolving that tension, it's never going to completely go away, is trust.
Sorry, I should have said that she was talking about the 90-minute disparity in per week in commute time for Black and Brown residents of Boston that Northeastern found in a research project that it did about 6 years ago, and that difference in time was a PTA appointment, for example, and that the result needed to be trust. I wanted to put that against Russell Holmes saying, Aloisi never should have said, I'll stop if you tell me to.
So, I mean, I was involved in this project very tangentially in 2009. So I want to be careful
rewrite history.
Thank
you for that.
The T has demonstrated success with center-running bus lanes in Boston recently on Columbus Ave. And if you go out there and look at it, it's been in operation for the past 3 or 4 years, very successful. It's actually being extended now to close to Ruggles Station. Again, it's a city-federal MBTA partnership. It works.
78% of the people surveyed satisfied with it.
Absolutely. Now, I think the reason that the T hasn't gone back and touched Blue Hill Ave since 28X is that there's a lot of people inside who are fearful, frankly, of going back there and trying to do something out there again. It's a very challenging community to work with because there is not that trust. Now, I can't tell you if the T has developed that trust yet. I'm not sure. I don't live there. But I could tell you they have success running similar projects. They have improved bus service a little bit out there with the larger buses. So there is a bit more of a track record now this time. The mayor is putting her political capital behind it. I'm pretty sure Phil Lang is going to be all in on this. So I think there is a chance this time that it could work if the community wants it and accepts it.
So I will say I ran an organization that worked in Grove Hall, spent a ton of time on Blue Hill Ave, and regularly heard from residents really compelling stories of decade after decade of organizations coming in, making promises, leaving without fulfilling them, doing research, taking the results away, never sharing them. You know, we have histories of attempted highway projects, et cetera. So there is a basis, Taylor, for that lack of trust as well. I want to hit the balance on this as we talk about it. Mayor Wu, in our conversation with her most recently, talked about wanting people to understand that this $44 million plan is a draft, that there's a block-by-block process now for the next 2 years. Based on your reporting, are you optimistic that ultimately there is a $44 million plan that actually gets executed in a couple years?
I think so. I'm newer to the region than both of you and have only read and heard about failed processes of the past. But it does seem like this is a really high priority both for her and for the city's chief of streets, Yasha Franklin Hodge, to really make this a reality for people. And I've heard as much as I've heard about from people in the community about their skepticism, I've also heard just how difficult it is to live, work, and you know, exist dealing with the unsafe conditions in Blue Hill Lab. And so what the city said when they announced the plan was there is widespread consensus that Blue Hill Avenue needs to change, but not a consensus about how. And so I think the city is sort of taking a leadership role, saying we're the transit experts. This is going to be the best route. And now I think it's smart of them to involve the community in how each block is going to look.
So the last thing on this before we look at Silver Line Extension to Everett Brian Kane is I am fascinated by the difference between the 28X proposal, which really was rapid bus transit, versus what this is, which will be faster, but not rapid bus transit. Are there really big distinctions between those two things?
I don't think there are. Many of us think bus rapid transit is bus replacement transit. So
what does that mean?
That it's put in place instead of rail. A lot of folks out, and one of the reasons the 28X was so unpopular was that there was a demand for rail. There was a sense that the Orange Line had been sort of removed from the Roxbury community when it was put underground, and that this was meant to sort of be a suboptimal replacement.
Second best.
Yeah. And again, I can't speak for folks out there. I don't live there. But I don't see a huge difference between what the T is doing now with the 60-foot sort of bendy buses running in some dedicated lanes and bus rapid transit. But, you know, don't go by me. I'm not a big bus rapid transit guy. I'm a rail guy.
You're a rail guy. All right. And Taylor Dolvin, the plan is the center lanes, which would provide some, I don't know, lack of obstacle by other vehicular traffic.
Yeah, exactly.
That should allow the buses to move faster, but also a commitment to keep the bus stops closer together than they would have been last time, which was a concern by some residents, which of course then more bus stops also means slower, right? So some faster, some slower this time around.
Yeah, my understanding is the other big concern back in 2009 was for Silver Line service, the fare is the same as the subway, whereas the bus fare is lower. And so this was going to increase fares in the community. And I think there was resistance
about that.
To that. Yeah. Mm. These center running bus lanes are proven to really make bus service more reliable and faster. And they've taken off in a lot of parts of the world, including right here in Boston on Columbus Ave, even though it's a really short section under a mile. This will be 3 miles. But this is really a proven solution to make bus service a lot faster and a lot more reliable.
Okay, so we're here with Taylor Dolvin of the Boston Globe, Brian Kane of the MBTA Advisory Board. We've been looking at sort of the desire by the MBTA to move forward and some of the things that sort of stand in the way. We started with operational stuff. Now we're looking at improvements and changes. And the other one that caught our attention, Brian Kane, was the MBTA looking at a report and embracing its recommendation that the T should extend the Silver Line 3 bus service to Everett. So this is a 6-mile extension into Everett, into Sullivan Square, at the tune of about $95 million. We'll get to, wait a minute, how can they afford that in a second? And I'll start with, in your mind, good idea?
Well, I think it's a great idea. I mean, right now, you can get on the Silver Line at South Station or Logan Airport, which are two huge gateways into the region, and get on the Silver Line and go to the Chelsea Market Basket. Now, I don't know about you, but whenever I get off an airplane, the first thing I want to do is go to a market basket. It doesn't make a lot of sense right now, sort of where it goes. It ends, like I said, at a supermarket. So extending it beyond and having better connections, certainly to Sullivan Square, and a lot of folks want to see it eventually extended to Kendall, will really help drive some ridership and make that route make a lot more sense. It does connect to the Chelsea commuter rail right now, which will get you on the Rockport-Newburyport line. But again, there's only sort of one stop into North Station. So I think it's a great idea. I wish they had done it when they had done the initial project. I have some concerns about the proposed routing, putting it on Broadway, putting it in some of the traffic. You know, the T owns the right-of-way, which is the old train track. You know, I mentioned I'm a rail guy. That's an old train track that they're going to run on. It could go behind some T property that the T owns in Everett right now and maybe get out of mixed traffic. But I think they want to try it this way, and we'll see. But it is a great thing, and I know Everett is very supportive of it.
So one of the things that caught our attention, Taylor Dolvin, is that Everett added 16% more housing between 2015 to 2021. You noted that in your reporting. So I'm going to play a little sound for you. The day that Monica Tibbetts-Nutt went from interim Secretary of Transportation to Secretary of Transportation. She was on Radio Boston, and we were talking in this case about enforcement of the MBTA Communities Act, but she was talking about incentivizing the more housing. Here she is.
We need to make sure that we're making the investments in the communities that want to build housing. And you're going to see that whether it's in central or western Massachusetts, South Shore, North Shore, we are going to put the money as DOT in the places that have done the things that need to be done and where the residents are actually living.
So cause and effect here?
Yeah, I think it's really hard with the housing component because, yes, you have Everett doing a lot of really transit-oriented development. They're limiting parking requirements. They're really incentivizing a lot of housing. And now the transit piece is years delayed. You know, this extension was studied in 2016. It was studied in 2019. It was studied. And the MassDOT has been involved in all of these studies. So this is years in the making. And you have to wonder, you know, if this had been implemented the first time it was given a green light, the first time it was decided it was a good idea, where would we be now on the housing component if this transit component was already existing? So when I saw the announcement about the Silver Line 3 extension, I was just really I thought at first, oh, this is an announcement of this happening. But this is really only an announcement of the MBTA and MassDOT endorsing this idea. It now has to be designed. It has to be budgeted. You know, we could be years away from seeing even construction begin on this. So I think the timing piece and back to Blue Hill Avenue is really hard. I think that's sometimes plays into the distrust in the community is like, well, is this actually real?
So in a sentence, Brian Kane, I'm on a clock here. The $95 million cost, we don't know where that comes from then.
No, we don't.
Well, there you go. All right. Brian Kane, Executive Director of the MBTA Advisory Board. Taylor Dolven, Transportation Reporter with the Boston Globe. I learn so much every time you're here. Thanks for being with us on Radio Boston.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.